Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear. I'm Susan Laris and Danz, and this show is going to be yet another one, which is simply a spontaneous conversation about the topic of breaking the fear habit. Because I think with the state of the world right now, there is no better time for us to be fully conscious of what really has been an addiction to fear in our world, an addiction to survival mode, essentially, through necessity, no doubt, in the childhood of our species. And I think we need to look at it that way. We need to decide, is it time for us as humanity to grow up? We have had way showers along the way, people who have shown us over the centuries what happens when you act in love and put aside your fear. And something else that I feel is very important to share is that the process of breaking free of fear-based thinking, and truly it is fear-based oppression over our lives, is doing it one moment at a time. If you try to do it for an entire week or an entire year, or just say, for the rest of my life, I'm not going to be afraid, it's perfectly fine to set that intent. But what you really need to focus upon is the current moment. Because, you know what, I talk a lot about fear. I'm writing a book about fear. My show is about fear. And yet the ironic thing about my path is that I have always been a person who was caught in fear. That was certainly a part of my path years ago. And in fact, I felt the oppression of fear for many years. And even today, there are times when I find myself having a fear-based thought. And I am aware more and more that fear is a reaction. Now, to really break the hold of fear, you do need to recognize that the human race is evolving. Because anyone who has been around pets or animals or has any knowledge of what it means to survive on this planet knows that fear is a part of survival. And that is essentially a mode of being that is childhood. And if we can trust and recognize that we have within us the higher potential to rise above survival mode on the planet, that's when the magic starts to occur. Now, I do have a chat room open today, and I welcome people in the chat. It is my intent to interact with those of you in the chat, so please feel free to enter your comments. I'm also going to take some callers today. I do have one caller on the line. I see you there. The guest call-in number, if you choose to call in, is 310-807-5104. And actually, we just lost our caller, and that's fine. my approach to these shows, which I have to say, I've been really happy to see that people actually do listen to these shows in the archive. I feel that when I'm sitting here doing a monologue, I do need to be conscious of the length of the show. And in fact, this show, if there isn't a lot of interaction, I will end it early, likely, because I'm not here to be talking on and on and on about these topics. I schedule these shows because I feel laid upon my heart something to share. And I really do sense right now that there is a great deal of fear in the world. There is a great deal of fear among some of the listeners listening to this show. And believe me, I understand, because I've been there. I'm still there at times. And I think the most important thing we can do is, when we become afraid, acknowledge it and say, okay, yeah, you know, that does seem scary. I mean, what's going on in the financial world? There are any number of other ways that oppressive tendencies in the world are trying to assert themselves. And yet another thing that you could be afraid of is some of the chaos energy. In fact, I heard that referred to on another show last night. There's a lot of chaos energy in the world where people, they are, and as it was expressed in this show I was listening to, they are becoming unhinged, and they don't know where to turn, and they're expressing their anger as rage. And what's happening is they're hurting one another, and that is what saddens me so much, is that I understand that there are those who feel very frustrated and oppressed and feel that their voice needs to be heard. And yet, when we allow that to express itself through rage or violence, what happens is it hurts the very people around us that you really don't want to hurt at all. And the question becomes, who is this they? Who is this they that you are rebelling against? Because that's actually very difficult to define. Looking at what's happened in England this week, I mean, I understand there's frustration there. You know, those in authority have a responsibility to act respectfully. That is very important. If they are not acting from a place of conscience and ethical behavior, that can cause a reaction. And so anyone who is in a position of power or authority in this world right now has a great mantle of responsibility laid upon them. But when, and I'm not saying in England, I don't know what happened in England to prompt whatever occurred, and I'm not going to pretend to know all the nuances of that society, because much of what happened there, it goes back a long time. However, there are ways in this world that oppression is expressing itself, and we have a choice as to how to react to that. There are certainly situations where leaders have not always acted responsibly, where there is not respect shown to the individual. And we need to respond to that in a responsible way. Because if we emerge into chaos, what may seem like an empowered response is actually a fear-based response. It's a chaotic response of having no idea as to what to do. And then those of us watching this on the sidelines, it's really easy for us to become afraid, because the problem with chaos in a society is it quickly names enemies that are not the enemy. It quickly pits, you know, people who are poor against the rich, people of one religious group against another religious group, and that's how in ages past things like witch burnings occurred, and things like entire societies being wiped out, things like genocide, even in our own past century, the last century. And we, as a person of faith, I can tell you that I have made the personal choice to trust in the quantum leap that is occurring on this planet. If I had not made that choice, I would likely be very fearful and I would have very little hope. But there are those of us in the spiritual community who are truly witnessing little miracles around us. In fact, I'll tell you one today, which is a huge coincidence. These are synchronicities. And I know there are skeptics out there who come up with all kinds of ways to criticize this. At the worst, they'll tell you it's crazy. At the best, they'll tell you, well, it's just pattern matching in the brain. But I will tell you something that happened this morning. I was really thinking about the rage that is simmering in parts of society right now. And I was thinking how important it is for us to discover empathy, no matter who we are. If we could experience true empathy so that we could actually see through the eyes of those we think we are somehow divided against, if we could see through their eyes, or if we could see through the eyes of those who are truly suffering, who are truly frustrated, if we could all, for a moment, truly feel what it's like to walk in the shoes of even those we would claim to be our, quote, enemies, that would change the world. And something that I posted on Twitter this morning, and I don't know if I have it right in front of me, the exact quote, so I'll paraphrase. It was essentially, empathy is the key to peace on earth. That it was a simple tweet. I think that's exactly what I said. And do you know what happened right after I posted that? I went into my email, checking it first thing in the morning, and there was a message awaiting me from the library of a book that I had requested. I read tons of books in any given week. I probably put more books on request at that library than a lot of people, both because of my own research and just my own interests, which are diverse. And what do you think, after tweeting that empathy is the key to peace on earth, what book is waiting for me that was just told to me this morning that it's now arrived on the shelf of the library down the street? The book is called The Key. Now, okay, what is the statistical likelihood of that occurring? Many of you may not know that I have a scientific background. I am a person who started in a very well-rounded way. I actually have a math degree and a computer science master's degree. And I'm not going to pretend to tell you exactly what the statistical likelihood of exactly that phrase, the key, showing up in my email within a few seconds of my tweeting that, but I can tell you the odds are astronomical against it, given all of the other possibilities that could have occurred. It is a synchronicity. And when that kind of thing happens, we know that we are loved and supported. That's the kind of thing that gives me the courage to just come on here with no script, really no preparation, just a feeling that something has been laid upon my heart to share, and just start talking, even if nobody interacts with me at all. That's fine. What I really appreciate is I know that there are people listening out there. And you know what? Even if only one person was listening, I'd still do this because I feel led to do it, and I feel that more and more of us need to simply speak what is in our hearts. You know, who am I? I'm a mom. I am a regular person who, you know, I'm starting to write more and more, but I am just a regular person speaking. And I think that more of us who really do feel that love is the answer, because love and is what is behind empathy, compassion. How many of the great spiritual teachers have taught us about compassion? And what about the golden rule? Do you know that the golden rule, where we treat others as we would treat ourselves, is a universal truth. It appears in many different spiritual systems. And isn't that fascinating that that would be the case? Because it is empathy. It is precisely empathy. It is the key. And so, back to the main topic of today's show, breaking the habit of fear. How do you break the habit of fear? You break it in the current moment by trusting in love. I have heard it said before, and I will tell you, it's interesting. When I had an awakening many years ago, I was very connected, very spiritually connected. And one of the things that just it came to me was that fear, that love is the opposite of fear. And I had never heard anyone say that before, and it seemed like kind of a strange concept. And then after this came to me, which I didn't really write anywhere, it was just something that was out there from the universe, I started seeing that same thing show up in places. And it's like, wow, because it's just not something I would have thought of by myself. It's not really necessarily a relationship that is intuitive right from the start. And so love is, I would say, the cure for fear. And so is trust. When we allow little miracles to come into our lives, just as simple as the one that happened to me today with that book, when we allow ourselves to be open to what is possible, amazing things occur. And what it does is it builds our strength. We may have one moment of the day where we're not afraid. And I will tell you, years ago, I was afraid a lot of the time. I was a worrier. I kind of came from a long line of worriers. And I tended to worry about a lot of things. I was very focused on my studies back then. I was always a scholar. I think I was voted most scholarly by my high school class. So there's an example. But I worried all the time. In fact, my friends would give me grief because I would be worrying that, you know, I failed the test when I actually got an A. And I really would worry all the time about minor things and about big things. I would worry about nuclear war. I look back at my poems back then because I grew up in that age where we felt that we were under threat during the Cold War, and I can see the fear that I had. And then to top it off, although I have to say within my own home, this was not stressed that much, but within the church where I was brought up in, and within certain influences, especially certain churches that I went to on Sunday night, for some reason Sunday night is when churches can be more open, there was a tremendous amount of fear shared with me about hell and the end times. And I went through many years of anguish, absolute anguish, because I could not reconcile the concept of a loving God with a God who would either torture or abandon anyone forever. In fact, I couldn't even reconcile, and this is so fascinating. One of my sisters shared with me a note that I wrote in church when I must have been 10 or 11 years old. And apparently they were talking about hell and the devil and all this. And I wrote a note, excuse me. The note I wrote was essentially, if we're supposed to love our enemies, wouldn't that apply to Satan? And I think the point there was, well then, you know, wouldn't God find a better way to deal with Satan, which at the time I believed in? Or I certainly was being taught that I had to believe in that concept. And I find that fascinating, through the eyes of a child, to see something so simple. And yet it didn't matter, because for many years, I was in such doubt that I couldn't even have a spiritual path. In fact, I abandoned my spiritual path altogether. By the time I got to my 20s, I couldn't reconcile the fear and the love, and I just buried it. I went on with my life. I went on with my studies. Eventually, I went on and became a mother, and I was focused on everything in my life. And then in my late 30s, I had a health crisis. It was a brief one. It was actually one that many women face, a scare. You know, you go for a mammogram, and it turns out with a potentially scary result. This one was a little bit scarier than most. It had a certain characteristic. Well, it scared me enough that it woke me up. As simple as that, just a simple thing. Thank God I didn't have to go through a worse health crisis, because I know many people do. And eventually it turned out fine, but it didn't matter. Just I had been on neutral. I had been coasting. I'd had nothing go wrong really in life. Not even a little glitch like that. And that one thing, especially since I had people in my family who had been touched by that disease, that was enough, as I would have said in my youth, to put the fear of God in me. But you know what? It didn't put the fear of God in me. It may be at first, but what it eventually ended up doing, it put the love of God in me. If not for that tiny little glitch that helped me to face my mortality. But I'll tell you, it took several years. And I actually went through some anguish even after that, because what it did was I realized I couldn't ignore my spirituality anymore. It was all fine and good to be this computer scientist, to be around all these people who were logical all day, although I'm sure there were spiritual people there too, because you know what? Spirit is very logical. And don't ever let anyone tell you otherwise. It is logical. But in any case, I was surrounded by a lot of people in my life who really didn't care about spiritual things. And so once I was awake and realized I had to come to terms with this, and not only did I have to come to terms with, what path was I to follow, I also had to come to terms with my fear, because I had been in deep fear that I was going to hell. And I will tell you, when you're a child who is raised with that possibility, and a time comes in your life where you have to face your mortality, and you don't have a spiritual anchor, that will shake you to your core if you truly are afraid of such a thing. And do you know what that did for me? After going through anguish after this event, even after the threat was gone, as far as any kind of threat to my health, I faced hell head on. I faced it. I faced the prospect of going there. And there is nothing that can deliver you into love more than realizing how preposterous it is that a loving God could do such a thing. I don't care how many justifications people have. None of them stand up. Not a one. Because God, however you choose to define God, is so much more loving, is so much more wise. Just look at the universe and tell me that God could not come up with a better solution than abandoning or torturing beloved souls, even torturing an enemy. See, that's where you really, the wisdom of a child. Why would God torture an enemy? And what kind of example does that set for our society? We need to break free of the fear that has oppressed us for centuries. Fear that has taught us how to react in a warlike way to our so-called enemies. We need to discover a way of living that is based in love. And I will tell you, love touches every spiritual path. Once we start to go down this road, we will find people in the spiritual community of every single religion experiencing and expressing the love and compassion of God. I will tell you that even those who have been influenced by fear-based concepts, the power, the true power of their spiritual path, if they are not a person caught in doubt like I once was, And I know lots of people like this who are very sincere. They do embrace some fear-based concepts, and yet what the true power fueling their spiritual life is, it is love. It is not the fear. Whenever you engage these people in conversation, and I have done it, I have on the internet spent hours and hours and hours of time in the past. I started out, in fact, this happened not all that long after my own awakening, is I started on a Christian forum. It was a Christian apologetics forum where I entered a topic essentially saying that if hell exists, everyone is going there. And then I proceeded to debate just about every apologist on that forum about the concept of hell. And yet I did it in an honest way, as someone who was open to hearing what they had to say. This was years ago. And this is how I started speaking openly. And I will tell you, not a one could justify it. They tried and tried. They couldn't really justify it, and you could tell that they were uncomfortable with it. Eventually, many of them expressed that doubt was normal on the spiritual path and that some things you just need to accept. I had one person who said to me that, well, you know, God is like, and they compared it to kind of like a Southern sheriff of the movies in the 70s they were using as an example. You know, he's got the gun, so you better listen, you know, or else. Whether it made any sense. And that person was even implying that this was an authority figure who was acting with corruption. I mean, that was the implication. And yet they were following it out of fear. And essentially, fear is not a basis for any kind of spiritual path. I don't think that any of these people could be confident in their spiritual path if not for experiencing the love. And the problem is that some of us, and we are many, we are more than many really know. There are many of us who came across that path who could never reconcile it. And I have to say, there are many times I wonder if it's true that everyone is in that category. They just don't always want to admit it, even to themselves, because the extremes are so polarized, it's very difficult to reconcile what seems like infinite love. Not just seems like, you're being told that and you want to believe that, and yet reconcile that with infinite cruelty. That's a problem. And, you know, no matter how many times that you want to excuse to yourself that it's based on a choice, I've heard that many times, that people choose God or Satan. And then, you know, if you don't want to be with God, well, you're not going to be. The fact of the matter is, people really, if they were knowledgeable of the choice to choose infinite love, they would always choose it. The only thing that keeps us from choosing infinite love is confusion. In fact, the fascinating thing is the only thing that keeps us from choosing it really is a type of free choice on this planet. On this show, in the past episodes, we've talked about why does evil exist, or what appears to be evil. Why does darkness exist on this planet? Because certainly nothing instills fear in us more than some of the violence that has asserted itself, not just in our current times, but if you go back through the millennia, unspeakable violence. And certainly that is occurring in parts of the world today as well. Some of us are insulated from that. So many an atheist has been born because they couldn't recognize, they could not reconcile that level of darkness with the concept of an infinite loving being. So why does it exist? The only way I can come to terms with it is because we are not robots, and that we are here by choice, and that this place is an exercise of sorts. It is a learning experience by seeing what can happen when you make certain choices. It's kind of like a child, you know, or even when we first learned about fire as a species. No doubt people were burned when they first learned about it. But you know what? They learned their lesson. And we don't need to be afraid of fire anymore in quite the same way. But we learned our lesson and we chose, and we are continually being guided towards the light. We are guided, but we are also learning. Now, I want to share that there is some interaction in the chat, and I appreciate that, and I'm going to share what's being said there. There is someone named Free to Be You in my chat room who responded to the golden rule, saying, "My favorite rule, the key indeed." Thank you. I think many of us feel that way, but catching up to what we're talking about right now, this life is the illusion we all bought into. The plan was to break out of the conditioning via learning to love and learning to know what true love is. Dare to step through the fire, says Free to Be You. Thank you, Free to Be You. I completely agree. You know, it's often been said, if you had never seen darkness, would you know the light? If we only saw light, would it appear as bright? We would have no knowledge of it. And I've heard so many theories about just who we are. You know, if you truly believe in the omnipresence of God, and you can't get away from this being in multiple spiritual paths, it's not just in the New Age path. You know, people often criticize so-called New Agers, like, I don't know how to label myself anymore, but I am involved and ever more deeply in the New Age community. So rightfully, people will label me a New Ager, and I'm fine to take that label. That's fine. And we are often criticized that we claim to be God and that we're somehow taking power away from God, that we're somehow challenging God. And actually, we are actually only claiming the omnipresence of God, which is within the very spiritual systems that often criticize it. I think that they're truly uncomfortable with this concept, and they don't know how to come to terms with it. It's too empowering. It's easier sometimes to be afraid, and yet we're not supposed to be afraid. We're supposed to step into the love. As Free to Be You says, dare to step through the fire. The fire can refine us. You know, when you're making pottery, for example, the fire puts the finishing touches on it. And there are those within the Christian path, when I used to talk with the apologists, there were a lot of people in that forum, although a number of people were banned, which was really interesting. Talk about being afraid. The Christian apologetics forum that I used to participate in banned universalists. There were two groups banned from their forum. Anyone who expressed the universal salvation of Christianity. So if it was someone who was using the Bible to discuss everyone is saved. The other people who were banned were Satanists. So those two groups were banned. They could not speak. If you said anything that they suspected to be a Christian universalist concept, you would be instantly banned from the forum. And I actually had to continually remind people I wasn't a Christian universalist. I was a New Ager. And even back then, I was calling myself that because they had... You had to categorize yourself over there, and that was the closest. And so anyway, what were they afraid of? What were they afraid of? Was it so difficult for them to even entertain the notion that we could all be reconciled to the love of God? Was it so hard? They would say it's a dangerous philosophy. I really believe they were afraid of it. And you know what? In those days when I used to hear a lot about Satan and demons, and boy, I've been around people in my life who were obsessed with those things, and certainly churches. I would often want to ask those people, even if those things exist, why would you play right into their hands by being afraid? Isn't the best thing to do is to not be afraid? And yet, and many of them would claim, we're not afraid. We're just, you know, we're challenging them and all this stuff. But you could really see the fear-based aspects of this. And so for me, you know, back to the main topic, breaking the fear habit, it was necessary on multiple levels. It was necessary on a spiritual level. I've started holding groups where occasionally, and I'll probably start doing this more and more, I'm trying to find ways to do this. I know that there are a lot of people who have come out of evangelical Christianity, and not just that, other fear-based perceptions. And I'm saying these are people who saw those theologies in a fear-based way. They were oppressive to them. There are those who maybe don't see it quite that way. But those who felt that oppression, they almost have a kind of syndrome where they fall into irrational fear, where even though they may be now on a path that it's obvious that unconditional love is incompatible with hell, sometimes they're afraid of hell. Like, what if there is a hell? What if they're right? I've heard that said before, but what if? You know, and from the other side, I've heard it said, well, you need to believe as we do, because what if we're right? There's this panic that if we don't believe as they do, we're going to go to hell. And they actually love you enough to tell you that. I mean, they're terrified for your fate, not to mention the terror that some of them feel over loved ones who they feel are going to hell. Yet another thing that is often not talked about and is an anguish and oppression within that church, where almost everyone has some loved one who they feel is going to hell. And unless they totally release the concept of empathy altogether, unless they totally divorce themselves from their love for that person, it's almost impossible for them not to worry about it. And understandably so. Now, I have known people, again in that forum, who told me, well, we're told, you know, that we'll be separated from our family, and that, you know, that they somehow steeled themselves to the possibility that this loved one is going to be tortured forever. And, you know, that's what I would remind them of. I would say, so you mean to tell me that you're going to be in paradise, you're going to be having this blissful experience, and you're going to be fully knowledgeable that you have a loved one who is being tortured for eternity. And this was a person who believed in a fire-based hell. Or even worse, you know, okay, maybe you believe in just the abandonment kind, where the person is just in emotional torment, separate from God. If you truly love that person, you could never be in heaven. And that's why the name of my post at the time was, if hell exists, everyone is going there, because it would turn heaven into hell. If there truly was that kind of enforced suffering in the universe with no way out, there could never be a heaven. Because if you were truly a loving person, if you were truly a good Christian who loves your neighbors, you couldn't be happy. Even if a stranger was suffering, you couldn't be happy. So the related question is always, how can you be happy in heaven with loved ones suffering in hell? And probably the best answer I ever got, actually the most novel answer, and this was when I later went on to express this question on yet another forum, which was the Oprah forum, which had a bigger audience, and I would put topics out there. It was amazing. Based on the popularity of the topic, the top three would end up on the front page of Oprah.com. And I don't mean some subpage, the front page of Oprah.com. And I was truly blessed to have topics up there more than once on the front page. And you'd get thousands and thousands and thousands of views. You know, some of them 25,000, 30,000 views. Many bloggers would love that. But you did it freely from the heart. You were not paid. You were not allowed to say who you were. Everyone was under a pseudonym. It was free sharing from the heart. And yet you had such a way of sharing things with the world. And we would just have honest questions. And one day on the Oprah Forum, we were discussing, how are you going to be happy in heaven with loved ones suffering in hell? And a person responded, I'd heard it said, a common response is, well, God will just make me forget. So I won't remember that loved one. And my response to that was always, now wait a second. As a mother, for example, say my child, my grown child, went to hell. If I forgot that I was a mother when I went to heaven, and that that child was never a part of my life, including as a grown-up, I would not be me. That would not be any kind of heaven for me. I would be some kind of zombie. Ah, I see from the chat, I actually have, okay, free to be you. You're an Oprah person, I remember. It's been so long. Yes, I was bridge builder on the Oprah forum. I haven't been in there in a while. They got rid of the old forum, but I'll type it in the chat when I get a chance. And that forum freed me to be able to speak. You know, I used to not be able to speak like this. I used to say, first I used to say, how could I ever write like this? And then I started writing reams of things on that forum and others. Then another day came when I said, okay, so I can write about these things. How could I ever speak, actually speak, especially spontaneously? And look what I'm doing now. I'm just going on and on, basically without a guest, which is a challenge for most radio hosts, because I'm just sharing what's on my heart. And yet I do appreciate that I've got people in the chat interacting with me as well. So anyway, back to the answer to that question. The best, most novel answer I ever got was that God would cause me to believe that my loved ones were really in heaven. So this person's response was that they would be deceived in heaven, but it would be a loving deception, and that God would somehow convince them, or just, you know, they would say, hey, look, this your son that you thought was going to hell, he really was saved. Here he is. However, he wouldn't really be there. It would be an illusion. But it would be an illusion so that this mother could be in paradise. Meanwhile, her real son, unbeknownst to her, would be suffering in anguish in hell. Now tell me that that's a God that you could trust, who would actually deceive you in heaven just so you can be happy. And you know, it really does come down to trust. And I think there are things going on in the world right now where they're really having an influence. One of the things that's having an influence is Rob Bell's book, Love Wins. Rob Bell is an evangelical minister, and he chose to write a book that could no longer defend or advocate for an eternal hell. And he wrote the most love-based book on this topic. And that book, which is a very simple book, is taking this world by storm. And I have seen in people that I know the influence it's having. And some people say, oh, it's the devil's influence. No, it's love's influence. Because our hearts are being drawn to love. That heart that we've been told in certain paths is wicked and deceitful, it's really our conscience. It's really the core of our being. It's really the expression of the omnipresent God within your own heart. You know, so many people talk about Jesus in your heart when on a certain path. Well, guess what? God is in everyone's heart. You can't have it both ways. Either God is omnipresent or God isn't. So God is in everyone, and you need to come to terms with that. And I believe that love can only guide us to love, and we're seeing it. On my last show, I had Carlton Pearson, yet another minister. In fact, even earlier than Rob Bell, he walked a very difficult road. If you have not listened to that show, I highly recommend it. Carlton Pearson was an evangelical minister who had a revelation that hell doesn't exist, and he preached it to his church. He ended up losing his entire mega church at the time. He completely trusted in the love of God. And that's what we're being called to do as well. It takes trust. There are so many ways of thought in the world, and I don't want to only focus on religion, but the minute we succumb to a philosophy which places us in some exclusive group earning God's favor, where that love is not available to another group, it creates division. And there's just no way of getting around that. And I know that people say, but it's the truth, and it's just the way it is. Just like that person told me a long time ago, well, you know, he's got the gun, so you better listen. You know what? As a responsible soul, I'm going to tell you something, and I came to this conclusion a long time ago. I was taught in my childhood about deceivers running amok. If there really are supernatural deceivers running amok, then I would suggest you be discerning regarding what kind of message, what kind of fruit is coming from a source. Is it love-based? Is it fear-based? Is it war-based? Is it division-based? Free to Be You is sharing. Thank you, Free to Be You. Told me I was a blessing on the Oprah Forum. And also, I'm a true troubadour of love and trust. Thank you. But also saying separation equals trepidation. Yep, fear. It is fear. We need to be discerning regarding fear in our world. These systems of fear-based thought, they originated because we have lived in a very fear-based world that is a struggle for survival every day. And as I said earlier, if I didn't have faith that we are in the midst of a quantum evolutionary leap as a species, I wouldn't have a lot of hope right now. Because I would say we are probably on the verge of another dark age. And yet, I don't believe that. Yes, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now that is frightening. There's a lot of warlike talk. There are people justifying war in the name of God. You know, I read a book. I was visiting relatives and someone gave me a book to read. It's apparently a bestseller. It's about a little boy who went to heaven or claimed to go to heaven. He was like 4 years old and he had an emergency. And it's called Heaven is for Real. And this book presents a very specific conservative evangelical view and says, see, he saw it, it's real. And by the end of the book, the little boy's even talking about how his father will be carrying a sword against the bad people, you know, that he saw this vision, the little boy saw this vision in heaven. And you know, I can't help but be distrustful of this book. I mean, I don't think the boy is lying. I think the boy is communicating things that he heard in church. Maybe not in Sunday school. The father keeps saying he couldn't ever have heard this in Sunday school. They don't teach this in Sunday school. Well, the subconscious mind of a child can pick up many things, and no doubt that child sat in church. And although part of the book was very loving and about Jesus being loving to the children and how wonderful it was, the part of the book that disturbed me was towards the end where he talked about there being swords in heaven, how everyone carried a sword there because they had to defend against the enemy. To me, as difficult as it is for us to release the hold of a centuries-old tradition, to me, war in heaven could only be considered an oxymoron. It does not make logical sense, And what was so fascinating about the end of the book is when the little boy told his father he'd be holding a sword in this battle, or maybe a bow and arrow. And it's fascinating. The little boy had just finished watching Narnia when he told his father this. So, you know, take that as you will. I mean, I think there was definitely an influence there. You sense, and this is the thing I wanted to point out, the father seemed uncomfortable with that. He doesn't come out and say it directly, but it's really clear when you're reading it. And it just goes to show, you know what? These people don't want to do that. Do they really want to be part of something that's going to make war on their neighbors just because their neighbor doesn't believe the same thing they do? Do they really believe this down to the core? You know what? I have enough trust in the love of God and the love of that community to know that if faced with that scenario, they would put their swords down and refuse to fight. I actually have that much faith in them because I love them and I've seen their love. And I choose not to divide myself from them, even though, yes, I'm saying some very open and honest things, things that are not popular, things that would probably get me labeled as a deceiver. They can use whatever label they choose, but deep in their hearts, they know what is consistent with love. It's obvious. They know what civilization is. They know how they want their own leaders to act. How would you feel if our own leaders were torturing our enemies in the most horrendous of ways? As a society, we have risen above that. So why would we expect that kind of behavior from God? And no matter how many times they say, oh, but you can't judge God, there are many things we don't know, I'll tell you what, you know what is right and true in your heart. You know. There's no escaping what you know. No wonder they labeled the heart as so wicked and deceitful. The heart is what led people to question the violence being perpetrated in the name of God. So of course it made sense that certain leaders would want you to distrust your very instincts of what is just and true, of what is love. Deep in your hearts, you know what love is. And I know I have some listeners who come from that belief system, and that's why I'm specifically addressing them here. We have a responsibility, those of us who can see the love within whatever spiritual tradition we follow, even if we have no spiritual tradition, those of us who know what true love is, we have a responsibility to share this with those around us. You know, I was taught in my youth, I was a very ineffective evangelist. When I was young, in fact, I would have been the last person in the world to speak up and talk about God. I was very quiet. That's because I had tons of doubts. And not to mention, at that time, I never would have thought that I could just get up and start talking. I used to write a lot, but talking about God would not have been my choice. Okay? Well, here I am, not only on this show, but I also feel we have a responsibility in the world, the way it is today, to have honest, open, loving conversations with those around us. Not to convert them so quite in the same way, but to simply get out in the open, do you really believe that way? Do you really, truly believe that way? And a lot of times, you are going to find that people in touch with the love, they're having doubts too. They're just afraid to express it. I've had a guest on this show several times. I'm sure she'll be on again soon. She used to be a worship leader at an evangelical church. She now leads a group called Portland Christians with Questions. That meetup group is growing by leaps and bounds. Why is that? Why is it growing? Because they have a safe place where they can talk about their questions. And I don't want to just pick on Christianity either. I mean, there are wonderful loving truths that come through Christianity. But on the other hand also, I want to point out that fear can express itself in other belief systems too. And we need to be aware of that. I have seen fear expressed on the New Age path as well. I see that among some people who are obsessed with the fear-based aspects of the law of attraction, for example. They sound like there's some universal Santa Claus watching them. You know, you better watch it. Better watch out. Watch your thoughts. And I understand the intent of what they're trying to say, and I do believe there is something to co-creation with God. That's how I would describe it, and that's a whole show in itself, and we actually have gone almost the whole time, but with a little bit of presence in the chat room, I feel okay with that. Anyway, if you're in some kind of belief system where all day you're being told to worry, if that's the way it's being presented to you in a non-love-based way, in a way that you want to hear an empowering way to hear that, it's more, hey, God is omnipresent, including in you. And don't forget that God is love. Do you think God is going to make you a victim of your worst nightmares? Even if that was the case, why would you focus on that? I have heard many great teachers berate people. Watch out. Watch out what you're thinking. That's fear. I'm sorry. I don't care what you believe about it. I'm still coming to terms with what I choose to believe about it. I'll be honest with you. I know there's something to this co-creation thing, but given my path and how I've seen fear exercise itself in other ways, I am probably especially discerning when I see it expressed there. And so those of us who are listening, and I do have quite a big audience where I know you come from that community, I want you just to be mindful, which is a proper statement in that anyway, not as a word of warning, in a love-based way. And I have heard that some of the best teachers, people like Michael Beckwith and those who teach that philosophy, they choose to focus on the love. If you catch yourself focusing on warnings and worries, and that is just self-destructive, even within the philosophy itself. So anyway, that's just an example of my saying that I'm not just picking on one group. I want us to be mindful of where fear is expressing itself in every possible way, no matter what our belief system is, because there is a tendency for it to show up. It shows up in many ways. And the more that we can release ourselves from those moments of fear, the more at peace we will be, no matter what our spiritual path is. You know, you want to try full, if you want to find true peace of spirit, you will find it in the stillness. You will find it when you quiet those thoughts, when you're no longer even worrying about your thoughts, when you're certainly no longer worrying about hell or demons or Satan or any kind of dark force, when you are simply focused on the quiet, loving peace of God, the universe, spirit, however you choose to label it. Even if you don't believe in God at all, and many people have struggles with that concept of God because they've been taught a particular label. Even if you're listening to this show and you are an agnostic or an atheist, you can still find that peace. Surely you believe in love. Surely you have seen love expressed in your life. And so the ironic thing is, even when you don't believe in love as something that's a part of a God or a higher power, love still believes in you. Love is still there for you. So I'm going to end this show on that note. Thank you for being here. I've got a new fall schedule coming up with a number of episodes with guests. Thank you again. Have a love-based day.